What would that do to my chances of getting back in through the doors of Winter's Inc? If it became common knowledge that I was seeing a psychiatrist, Aiden might use that as an excuse to shut me out. I'd think about it later. Pulling on a t-shirt and a pair of cargo pants, I left my suite and jogged silently down the stairs. I wasn't going for a drink, and I didn't want a book. Remembering that sad bowl of sliced fruit at dinner, I knew exactly what I wanted. Looked like I wasn't the only one thinking about a midnight raid on the kitchen. The lights were on when I got there. At the sound of my feet on the hardwood floor, Sophie jumped and let out a tiny shriek. She whirled, the refrigerator door swinging shut behind her, and clutched her hands to her chest, her green eyes wide. The warmth that flooded my chest at the sight of her took me by surprise. I thought I was coming to the kitchen for food, but once I saw Sophie, wrapped in that bulky white robe, her silvery blonde hair spilling over her shoulders, I knew what I really wanted was her.
Chapter 7. Sophie. I almost had a heart attack when I turned around and saw Gage standing there. I still wasn't used to running into someone else in my nightly wanderings. Plus, he'd caught me raiding the fridge. That would have been fine if this were my house, but it wasn't. I knew better. I was an employee. I wasn't family. I shouldn't be raiding the fridge after midnight, looking for something sweet, especially after lecturing Amelia on eating too many cookies. I was such a hypocrite. But I wasn't a diabetic, and secretly, I completely agreed with Amelia. Fruit was great, but it wasn't dessert. Mrs. W. had texted that there was leftover chocolate cake hidden in the vegetable drawer of the fridge, where Amelia was sure not to look. I wasn't going to pass that up, even if the chocolate might keep me awake. It's not like I was sleeping anyway. I'd tried. I'd washed my face, drank a cup of my normal sleepy time tea, and had dutifully gotten into bed. Nothing. I lay there staring at the ceiling for 2 hours before giving up, pulling on my robe, and coming in search of the mythical chocolate cake. Standing in the doorway of the kitchen, Gage grinned at my shriek, and I felt my cheeks turning pink. If I could get through one day without embarrassing myself in front of this man, I could die happy. So far, it hadn't happened. It didn't help that just the sight of him made me blush. It wasn't my fault. Gage Winters was hot. His face was beautiful, those blue eyes, sharp cheekbones, and full lower lip. But his body? Every inch of him was chiseled, the muscles of his biceps straining the sleeves of his t-shirt, and his forearms. I'd never gotten distracted by a man's forearms before. I couldn't remember the last time I'd been distracted by a man at all, and then definitely not by his forearms. I could stare at Gage all day. "Hungry?" he asked, his eyes scanning me from head to toe, something in them making my blush hotter. "Huh? Why was he staring at me like that? His expression was almost predatory, but I didn't feel threatened. The way he was looking at me was... it was like he wanted me. But that didn't make sense. I wasn't Gage Winter's type. I couldn't be. Not in a million years.
"You're standing in front of an open refrigerator," he clarified. "So I assumed you were hungry."
"Oh," I said stupidly. "Not hungry, exactly." I opened the vegetable drawer and spotted the cake plate nestled among stalks of broccoli and a bunch of asparagus. I lifted it out and showed it to Gage. His eyes widened in appreciation, and he grinned.
"I take it Amelia doesn't know about the cake?"
he asked. I shook my head.
"How do you know about the cake?"
he probed, pacing closer. I resisted the urge to back up. Instead, I carefully placed the cake on the kitchen island between us. "Mrs. W. told me," I said, opening the drawer to retrieve two forks.
"She told you about chocolate cake, And she didn't tell me?
Gage took one of the forks and dug into the generous slice of cake. I can't believe it. I'm her favorite. Without thinking, I said, I know. But I think she felt like she owed me one, after the bugs in the lamp incident. I took my own fork full of cake, smaller than Gage's, and lifted it to my lips. Bittersweet chocolate melted across my tongue, and I closed my eyes in pleasure. Gage made a low sound in his throat, and my eyes flew open. He was staring at me again with that same look. Predatory, possessive, hungry. I watched him lift a forkful of cake to his own mouth, my eyes riveted as his lips opened and his straight white teeth pulled the cake from the fork. When his tongue flicked out to catch a stray crumb, a shiver went down my spine and heat bloomed between my legs. This was bad. I should have left. I should have put down the fork and gone back to my room. I had no business staring at Gage's mouth. Even if I put aside the fact that I worked for his family, that I was, in a way, his employee, Gage Winters was the last man I should look at to break my dry spell, for so many reasons. I should have put down the fork and gone back to my room and made a list of all the reasons I should stop staring at Gage's mouth. I didn't. I watched him take another bite of cake, and the heat between my legs grew. So stupid. I was so stupid. Stupid and helpless beneath his blue gaze. I dug my fork into the cake for another bite. I wasn't paying attention, and I ended up with mostly frosting. I licked it off the tines of the fork, and Gage made another low sound in his throat, risking a quick look at his face, and I saw his eyes narrowed on me. I stood there, frozen in place. My first instinct was to run, a gut response to the tension in his muscles, the heated intent in his eyes. I stayed where I was. If I ran, he would chase me. Gage Winters was the predator, and I was the prey. But that wasn't why I didn't run. I wasn't afraid of Gage. I probably should have been. He was twice my size, and I was alone with him. Not only was he a lot stronger than me, the night we'd met, he'd proven he wasn't quite stable. I wasn't afraid of Gage. I was afraid of myself. Gage moved, breaking the stillness between us and digging his fork into the slice of cake. I didn't expect him to bring it to my mouth, the cold metal of the fork urging my lips open. The chocolate melted on my tongue, sweet and rich. Gage set the fork on the island with a click of metal on marble. Lifting a hand, his fingers slid along my chin, his thumb brushing my lower lip. I swayed into him, the heat of his skin a magnet. He dropped his head and whispered, "You have chocolate on your mouth." Then he kissed me. All thought of running dissolved as his lips slid over mine, light as a whisper. I made a sound somewhere between a whimper and a moan, and Gage's arm wrapped around my waist, pulling me flush to his hard, tall body. My lips parted, and Gage was there, kissing me harder, his tongue running along my lower lip. He tasted of chocolate and man. I fell into the kiss, goosebumps covering my skin as his fingers tightened on the back of my head, tilting my face to his. He lifted me, setting me on the counter and moving between my legs, one strong hand on the small of my back, pulling me against him. With me on the island, the difference in our heights wasn't a problem. Gage's hands went to my waist, jerking on the belt of my robe, and pulling it free, pushing back the thick fabric to bare my nightgown-covered body. My nightgown wasn't anything special, plain white cotton trimmed in lace. It covered me from my collarbone to my knees. It was pretty and feminine, but the furthest thing from seductive. Gage didn't seem to care. The cotton was so thin, the heat of his hands felt like we were skin to skin. I was barely thinking, all of my attention captured by his mouth moving on mine, the utter possession in his kiss. If I had been thinking, I would have expected him to go straight for my breasts, The few men who'd gotten this far with me had done exactly that. I should have known Gage would be different. One hand slid up my body, moving over the side of my breast to my shoulder, and sliding up my neck, sending shivers over every inch of skin he touched, before his hands buried themselves in my hair, and he pulled my lips to his, kissing me deeper. His other arm wrapped around my waist, pulling me to him, pressing my body to his until there was no space between us, my breasts flattened to his hard chest, his hips forcing my legs open, the hard length of his cock pressing into me. Only a few layers of fabric separated that cock from my heat. His cargo shorts, my underwear. Not much. I didn't care. I didn't care about anything but Gage touching me, kissing me. He was heat and strength surrounding me, taking me over. I wrapped my legs around his narrow hips, holding him tight, rolling my hips into his. His chest rumbled with a groan as he lay me back on the island. Tearing his mouth from mine, he dropped his face into the crook of my neck, his breath hot against my skin. He was holding back, restraining himself so fiercely, his muscles shook in barely perceptible tremors. I rolled my head back on the cold marble of the island, pressing my breasts up into him. I didn't know what I was doing. I wasn't thinking. Gage had kissed me, and at the touch of his lips, something inside me had broken open. Something feral and needy. After so many years of emptiness, my body had woken up, and it wanted. Gage's mouth closed over the side of my neck, sucking and tasting my skin, his tongue tracing my frantically beating pulse. At the touch of his long fingers on the side of my breast, I went wild, squirming against him, shuddering when his fingers closed over my nipple and squeezed. A bolt of pleasure streaked between my legs, and I gasped his name, Gage. His mouth moved to my ear, and he breathed, Sophie, fuck Sophie. A thump sounded down the hall, followed by a tumbling noise, as if someone had knocked over a stack of books. We both went still, breath caught in our lungs, hearts pounding frantically. Ice washed through me as I realized where I was. Spread out over the island in the kitchen of Winter's house, Gage Winters between my spread legs, his hand on my breast, his mouth on my neck. What the hell was I thinking? I was going to lose my job, and Gage... Gage hadn't struck me as the kind of man who took advantage of a woman working for him. But here I was. He hadn't exactly taken advantage, though. Had he? At that thought, I shoved him back and scrambled off the island, yanking my robe shut and tying the belt in a tight knot. I couldn't meet his eyes. "Excuse me," I said, moving to sidle past him and escape the kitchen. Gage's hand shot out and closed around my wrist. I jumped in surprise. I didn't mean to. Some reactions are too ingrained to outgrow, and, for me, being grabbed by a strong hand is one of them. I went still under his grip, then carefully twisted my wrist in his hand, trying to free myself without struggling. Struggling only made it worse. Gage's fingers held me securely, but his grip wasn't tight, wasn't painful. Voice so low I could barely make out his words, he said, Wait, I heard something. You heard it too, didn't you? I don't want you to walk out there by yourself. Gage's demeanor had shifted, and I'd been so panicked from his hold on my wrist, I'd missed it. A minute ago, leaning over me on the island, he'd been shaking with tension. Now he was the same, but it wasn't passion firing his nerves. I looked up into his eyes and realized... He was on high alert, every one of his senses focused on the sound we'd heard down the hall. Maybe it was Aiden, I whispered. I knew it wasn't Amelia. She slept like a rock, and after months of working for her, she'd never woken a second earlier than she had to. But, for that matter, I'd never known Aiden to be awake in the middle of the night either. I was up often enough. I would have noticed. Agreeing with my inner thoughts, Gage said, No, it's not Aiden. I would have heard him on the stairs, and Aiden never wakes up in the middle of the night.
You think someone's in the house? The alarm is on, isn't it? My gaze swept the kitchen, settling on the lighted panel by the door to the laundry room. Red lights glowed, indicating that the alarm was set and operating normally. Gage's hand tightened on my wrist, and I winced. Immediately, his fingers fell open, and he released me. His blue eyes met mine, focused and intent, but somehow haunted. Something lurked there, dark and afraid. Until that moment, it hadn't occurred to me to be afraid. But I remembered someone had broken into this house once before, and when they had, two people had been murdered.
I need to go check it out, Gage said. I don't want to leave you in here. Too many entrances. It's not secure. I want you to follow me down the hall. Stay right behind me, okay?
I nodded. I wasn't completely sure there was someone else in the house. The alarm was on, and I'd heard something, but maybe I'd misunderstood. Maybe it was the air compressor kicking on, or the refrigerator in the garage. It was a big house, and old. Odd sounds weren't unusual, and at night things like that always seemed amplified. What you might ignore during the day grew to a threat in the dark. That didn't mean there actually was a threat. I felt a little calmer after talking myself down, but that didn't mean I didn't follow Gage closely out of the kitchen. He guided my hand to his belt loop, silently threading two fingers through the strip of canvas. I shuffled down the hall behind him, pausing as we reached the doors to the dining room. Gage stopped, scanning the moonlit room. A moment later, he nodded to himself, and we moved on, through the entry hall, stopping again at the doors to the living room. Gage did another quick scan before we moved on. The library and Aiden's office were at the end of the hallway, facing one another, the wine room in between. Gage pressed me to the wall outside the library, crowding me with his big body. Shielding me, I realized. It was here, he said. The library or the office. I need to check them out. I can help, I said inanely. I wanted to help, but honestly, what did I think I was going to do? I was a nurse. Unless there was someone standing in the middle of the room holding a sign that said, I'm the intruder, I wasn't going to be much use.
Gage must have agreed because he said, No, I don't have time to take you to your room and clear it.
Making a decision, he led me to the wine room in the back of the short hall between the library and Aiden's office. Gage swung the door open, tucked me behind his big frame, and quickly determined the room was empty. Flipping on the light, he led me in, saying,
Lock it behind me. Don't open the door until I come back.
Be careful, I said. Gage gave a short nod and pulled the door closed. I flipped the bolt and settled in to wait. Chapter 8 Sophie. The wine room was less a room and more an oversized walk-in closet. The proportions were cozy, the design intimate. Racks of wine bottles lined the sides and back walls from floor to ceiling, the bottles secured behind glass, a discreet digital display showing the temperature. In the center of the small room was an island with a small sink, dishwasher, racks of wine glasses, and drawers that probably contained all sorts of wine-related tools I wasn't familiar with. I wasn't a big wine drinker. I wasn't a big drinker at all. My husband had loved wine and had expected me to enjoy it with him. Reason enough to avoid the stuff now. With the door securely shut, I couldn't hear a thing from outside the wine room. The more I turned it over in my head, the less I was sure we heard anything. Maybe it was my own guilty conscience. Gage had kissed me, and worse, I'd kissed him back. I needed to get my head together. I was not going to mess up my life like this. The last thing I needed was a man. My brain thoroughly agreed, but my body, still humming from the feel of Gage between my legs, his mouth on mine, his calloused fingers exploring me, my body disagreed. I'd never felt anything like that before. Never. I'd kissed a few boys in high school. Hadn't dated much in college or nursing school. I'd been too busy,
too worried about losing my scholarship and trying to finish as quickly as I could to bother with something as trivial as a social life. Then I'd met my husband on my first job, and that had been the end. Anthony had been my first lover, and never once had he inspired the reaction Gage did, not even close. I'd thought kisses like Gage's belonged in the movies. A quick knock sounded on the door to the wine room, followed by, "It's Gage." I unlocked the door and opened it. "Did you find anything?" Gage shook his head.
"No one's there. Everything's fine. I'll walk you to your room."
I tried not to wonder if Gage was going to kiss me again. I doubted it. As we crossed from the back corner of the house where the library was to my bedroom in the front, Gage kept his arms securely around my waist. His eyes scanned the space around us with each step. When we reached my door, Gage followed me in. For a second, my heart leaped in hope before I ruthlessly reminded myself there was nothing to hope for. If Gage thought he was here to pick up where we left off in the kitchen, he was mistaken. We shouldn't have kissed. And it wasn't going any further than that. When he led me to the bed and pushed me down to sit, my mind and my body went to war. My brain insisting that I set him straight, and my body ready to lay back and let him do anything he wanted. I cursed myself for a fool. Gage left me sitting on the side of the bed and methodically searched my room. Here I was, trying to talk myself out of sleeping with him, when Gage was only here to make sure I was safe. He was quick but thorough, checking my closet, my bathroom, behind the curtains at the window seat, even beneath my bed.
"Lock your door,"
he said abruptly when he was finished. "You sure everything's okay?" I asked from my seat on the edge of the bed. In answer, he said,
"I'm not going to let anything happen to you, Sophie. Lock your door."
Then he was gone. Slowly I stood and went to the door, turning the lock. I wasn't sure if I was locking Gage out or myself inside. I didn't fall asleep until dawn. I wasn't afraid of the sound we'd thought we heard. By the time I'd locked the door of my bedroom, I'd convinced myself it had been nothing more than the overreaction of a guilty conscience. No, I couldn't sleep because I couldn't stop thinking about kissing Gage. Every nerve in my body was awake, alive, needy. I'd never felt this before. Maybe a little in those long-ago high school fumblings with boys I could barely remember. Had I felt this with Anthony? If I had, the memory was lost, the pleasure of desire burned away by everything that had come later. I racked my brain for memories of those first dates with Anthony, but of all the emotions that rose to the surface, none of them was desire. I'd been awed by Anthony. He was older than I was, successful, wealthy, and he'd wanted me. He'd taken me out to elegant restaurants, opened the door for me, treated me with respect and care. I'd been too young, too inexperienced to understand, to see beneath his good manners to the monster lurking within. Of all the things I'd felt with Anthony, I'd never desired him, not like this, not with every cell in my body, with a need that drove me so mindless, I forgot where I was, who I was, and only wanted more, more of Gage, more of his hot mouth on my skin, his hands on my body. I was alive. For the first time in my life, every part of me was alive, awake and ripe and ready. Even before Anthony, I'd felt as if my body were sleeping. I liked the idea of romance, of flowers and dates and kisses, but no one had really gotten to me. I'd never had a real crush, the kind that keeps you up at night, has you craning your neck to see if he's walked in the room, straining your ear for the sound of his voice. I thought there was something wrong with me, that I was lacking some essential element of being female, of being human. After I married Anthony, I was convinced it was true. I felt desiccated, dried out like an autumn leaf. He told me I was beautiful, called me his perfect girl. But he didn't want me. Not like that. Not with his body. In another marriage, it would have been a tragedy. By the time I fully realized what was missing, I was grateful. Our wedding night had been chaste. As chaste as you can get while still having sex. I'd expected romance. Wasn't I supposed to? He hadn't been cruel. He'd been indifferent. I'd waited for him in our bedroom in a silky black negligee I'd shyly bought for the occasion. Anthony's eyes had tightened at the sight of it, and he'd gently helped me into my robe before leading me to the bed. He lay me down on the side, pulling my hips to the edge of the mattress, and gone to his knees between my legs. A moment later, he touched me there. I remember jumping in surprise and his amused chuckle. Then pressure and a tearing pain. Anthony moving over me with quick, hard thrusts. He'd stiffened, emptying himself into me. For one brief second, we were frozen, me in confusion and Anthony in release, before he'd withdrawn from my body, tucked himself away, and stood. He hadn't said anything, just nodded and left. The next day, all of my nightgowns had been replaced with thick white flannel that covered me from my neck to my toes. They were ugly and sexless, the kind of thing I imagined a grandmother might wear if she had terrible taste and was freezing cold. Anthony came to my bed once a month. A doctor showed up a few weeks after our wedding to insert a birth control implant in my upper arm. They were supposed to last several years, but Anthony had the implant replaced every year, like clockwork, just in case. Anthony didn't want children yet. It never occurred to him to ask what I might want. The moment he decided to marry me, my wishes became irrelevant. Irrelevant to him. I still had plenty of wishes, for all the good they did me. It didn't take long to realize that Anthony didn't want a wife. He wanted a possession. He alternately praised me, punished me, or forgot about me entirely, depending on how I fit into his plans. One night, he might inform me we were having guests and expect me to play hostess. He'd praise my cooking and kiss my cheek and give the perfect impression of a loving couple. The next night he might pull me from my bed in the dark and come at me with closed fists, his eyes cold and empty. I rarely knew why. Anthony was completely self-contained. Nothing ever showed through the mask he presented to the world. There were no cracks, no signs of what was coming. At dinner he might thank me for ironing his shirt so perfectly, and hours later beat me unconscious. I knew his job was stressful, though I didn't entirely understand what he did. And by the time we'd been married a month, I knew better than to ask. Obedience was survival. I never knew what set Anthony off, but I knew he expected me to obey his every order. I thought if I did as I was told, I might be able to save myself. I tried. There was no escape. I thought about it constantly. Anthony played the part of a loving husband, but he knew what he wanted, and he was clever. We lived miles from anywhere, buried in the country. When we gave small dinner parties, Anthony's friends would tease us, commenting on a sophisticated young couple like us choosing such a rural setting. Anthony always pulled me close and said that we liked the privacy. His property was bounded by a tall fence, patrolled by well-trained dogs, and there was always, always a guard. They never spoke to me. The first time I tried to leave, the taxi had been politely turned away by the guard, and I'd been told to go back inside. I hadn't yet understood that I wasn't just Anthony's wife. I was his prisoner. Anthony had punished me without a word, pulling me from my bed in the dark, the only sounds in the room his fists striking my body, and my gasping promises never to leave. I tried again when I worked up the courage. That time I made it as far as the fence before I was found and returned to the house. Anthony punished me that night with a white-hot rage I'd never seen before. I'd been sure he would kill me as he struck me over and over, kicking me when I fell to the floor. At the end, he dragged me up, his arm around my neck, and choked me until my vision went black, and I passed out. It was the only time he left a mark on my face. My eyes were swollen shut when I woke the next morning, my body so bruised I could barely move.
Anthony had been there at my side, holding my hand. He spooned broth through my torn lips, and for the first time and last time in our marriage, he explained why he wanted me, why he couldn't let me go. "It grows in me," he'd said, as calmly as if we were discussing the weather. "The darkness builds up, every day, telling me to do things, bad things. The darkness wants blood. You're the only one who makes it go away. It likes you, so sweet and pure. If I give you to the darkness for a while, it leaves me alone."
That was when I understood, really understood. Anthony wasn't cruel. He wasn't mean. He was completely insane. He was a monster, hiding behind the mask of a normal man. Only once did I work up the courage to ask what he'd done about the darkness before he found me. Once was enough. Anthony had shaken his head sadly and trailed a fingertip down my cheek, saying, "Sweet Sophie, if I told you, it would give you bad dreams. The darkness needs blood. It's happy with just a little of yours. Anyone else? And it needs so much more." I never asked again. I didn't want to know. Maybe I should have been glad that his beatings spared some other person a more horrible fate. I wasn't. I didn't want to sacrifice myself for the good of some stranger. I just wanted to be free. Freedom was a dream, a fantasy. I ordered my clothes from catalogs, my groceries from a list I gave to the guard. Every few months a stylist came to trim my hair, working in silence while the guard watched us both. Once Anthony brought me home after our wedding, I never left that house until he died, 3 years later. 2 years had passed since the day the kind police officer had informed me of Anthony's death. I'd gone through the motions, half paralyzed by the tentative hope that I might have been granted a second chance at life. I sold our house and quietly moved away. For the first year, I'd focused on getting my nursing license current and finding a job. After so much time away from the world, I found that I preferred working in private homes rather than the hectic environment of the hospital or clinic. I thought about going to therapy. I knew I should, but something inside me revolted at sharing the humiliating details of my marriage. I knew it wasn't my fault. I understood that having the bad judgment to marry a man like Anthony didn't mean that I'd asked for what had come after. He'd been so charming when we'd met. He'd completely swept me off my feet. I'd been too young and inexperienced to see the truth, and I hadn't deserved anything that had happened. I knew that. Knowing it wasn't my fault didn't mean I trusted my own judgment, and even if I did, my best judgment told me Gage Winters was the last man I should be thinking about. So what if he set my body on fire? So what if this was the first time I'd ever felt real lust for a man? Was it worth risking my job? And even if I didn't care about my job, which I did, Gage was not a safe bet. He was clearly suffering from post-traumatic stress, and had admitted himself that he wasn't entirely stable. With my history, the last thing I needed was to get wrapped up in some guy who couldn't control himself. Too much risk. Too much danger. Too much everything. I owed myself more than that. I had to be smart, and kissing Gage Winters was not smart. Chapter 9. Sophie. My alarm woke me only minutes after I finally fell asleep. I dragged myself from bed feeling hollow and fuzzy. A hot shower didn't do much to help. I covered the circles beneath my eyes with makeup, knowing Amelia would spot the camouflage and scowl at me. Having never suffered insomnia a day in her life, Amelia was of the firm conviction that all I needed to do was close my eyes and simply fall asleep, as if I hadn't tried that a million times. I braided my wet hair and pinned it into a bun, Buttoning a carefully ironed camp shirt and tucking it into my jeans, I wished for a uniform, for something that would clearly divide me from the rest of the household and remind everyone that I didn't really belong here. Gage wasn't at breakfast, but surprisingly, Aiden was. He was usually out of the house by the time Amelia and I went in to eat. When I entered the room, he said,
"Sophie, I'll be leaving town on business for a few days. I'd like to have a short meeting in my office before I go, after breakfast."
"Of course. Just let me know when you're ready." He rose from the table, folding his newspaper to take it with him. Sending Amelia an affectionate smile, he said,
"No rush. Enjoy your breakfast, and when you're done, stop by my office."
To Amelia, he said,
"Behave yourself while I'm gone."
Amelia smiled a Cheshire grin and winked at me. It was pretty much a guarantee that Amelia would not behave herself while Aiden was gone. But then, Amelia never placed a high priority on behaving herself at any time. I did my best to keep her under control, for her own health if not the sanity of everyone else living here. But secretly, I loved her irrepressible sense of mischief. I envied it. I was a lot of things. Responsible, dutiful, loyal. I was not mischievous, and I noticed that people who were, people like Amelia, always seemed to be having more fun. Fun had never been a big priority in my life, but maybe it should be. Maybe I was doing this all wrong. A quick glance around the palatial dining room reminded me that it was all well and good for people like Amelia Winters to be lighthearted and mischievous. She had a family fortune to pay her bills. I'd been responsible because I'd needed to get scholarships if I wanted to go to college for nursing school, and after that, I had to work hard to keep them. I couldn't afford to lose my job because I thought every day should be more about fun than hard work. I adored Amelia Winters. I truly, honestly did. But she and I were playing from a different set of rules, and I couldn't forget that. We finished breakfast, and I settled Amelia in front of the fireplace in the library before crossing the short hall to Aiden's office. He looked up from his desk with a quick smile and gestured to the chair in front of him, saying,
"Sophie, take a seat."
I did, and waited.
"One second," he said,
looking back at the paper in front of him, making a few small notes, and quickly scanning the words, his dark eyes flashing back and forth rapidly, before he signed at the bottom and neatly placed the paper to the side. Aiden Winters wasn't the type of man to make you sit and wait as a power play. That was one of the many things I liked about working for the Winters family. They were wealthy and powerful, beyond my conception of it, really. But they weren't all caught up in their egos, didn't feel the need to prove anything to anyone. In the 6 months I'd known him, Aiden had been honest, forthright, and fair. Yet again, I reminded myself that I did not want to lose this job. I felt a trickle of fear that somehow Aiden knew what had happened in the kitchen the night before, and had called me in here to fire me. But no, if Aiden were going to fire me, he wouldn't have smiled at me and told me to take my time at breakfast. I'd seen Aiden unhappy before. He didn't lose his temper, didn't rage and throw things. No, when Aiden Winters was angry, he went icy cold. I tried to relax. Finally, he looked up with another smile and said,
"Sorry to ask you in here and make you wait. I wanted to finish going through those documents while they were fresh in my mind."
"It's no problem. Amelia settled in the library, and we don't have any plans this morning." Aiden rose from behind his desk and crossed the room to close the door to his office. When it was securely shut, he turned and went back to his seat behind his desk.
"Amelia has ears like a hawk,"
he said in explanation. I couldn't help laughing. "When she notices you close the door, she may go get a water glass to hold up against it," I said. Aiden grinned in response, and I couldn't help grinning back. Aiden was so often serious, almost grave. He carried so much on his shoulders and didn't smile as much as he should. When he did, he was almost painfully handsome. Not my type. His beauty was refined, elegant, austere. After Anthony, that style of male good looks would never spark my interest. but I could appreciate the view all the same, especially knowing that Aiden was no Anthony. He was a good man who loved his family.
"We'd better talk fast before she gets back here with that water glass," he said. "I just wanted to check in with you that everything is good, her occasional pranks aside. Amelia's well?"
I laughed again. "As much as they can be inconvenient, I'd say her occasional pranks are one of the signs that Amelia is doing very well. As you've probably noticed, she's still resistant to her adjusted diet, but she's been sticking to it for the most part, and we've been able to keep her blood sugar under control with diet, which is very important at this stage. We've been doing exercises every day, a combination of yoga and walking and floor exercises to enhance her flexibility. We haven't been able to use the pool now that the weather has changed, but overall, I've been pleased with her progress. She has excellent mobility for her age."
"That's good to hear. I'm very glad you're with us, Sophie. I knew when Amelia moved in that I wouldn't be home as much as I'd like, but work has been even more hectic in the last few months than I'd expected. It's reassuring to know that she's not only looked after, she's a friend."
My cheeks heated at his praise. "Truthfully," I said, "Amelia is easy to like." A laugh exploded out of Aiden, surprising both of us, I think. After he got his mirth under control, under his breath he said,
"Tell that to Mrs. W."
I shrugged a shoulder and shook my head. "Mrs. W is a special case."
"I haven't missed the way you run interference between them, and it's appreciated. They're both very important to us. Amelia obviously is family. So is Mrs. W. And I know that all of us were concerned there'd be fireworks with those two in the same house, no matter how big this place is. You've done an admirable job keeping the peace."
"It helps that Mrs. W. has her cottage. If she lived in the house itself, I think that would be too much temptation for Amelia," I admitted. In a low voice, in case Amelia was listening at the door, I asked, "Do you know why they dislike each other so much? Neither of them will tell me." Aiden shook his head, more in resignation than denial. In an equally low voice, he said, "It's an old story, and I'm giving you this second hand so I don't know how accurate it is. But you know Amelia left home years ago and moved to the West Coast to be with Janice, her partner?"
I did know. It was common knowledge, and Amelia spoke often of Janice, who had died a few years before after a very long battle with cancer. Janice had been the love of her life, and though Amelia played it down, I could only imagine the uproar when, decades ago, one of the premier debutantes in Atlanta society had run off to California with another woman. Her family hadn't cut her off financially, but the older generation had made it clear she wasn't welcome home. It was obvious that none of their children agreed because the Winters family I knew openly adored their Aunt Amelia.
"We've talked about it quite a bit," I said, in answer to Aiden's question.
"Is that why Mrs. W. doesn't like her?" I asked carefully. I adored Helen Williamson, but I wasn't sure how that adoration would hold up if she disliked Amelia for being gay. Aiden gave a sharp shake to his head, dispelling my worry.
"No, no, she doesn't. We've talked about it, so I know that's not it. But based on a conversation I overheard between my mother and Mrs. W. years ago, I got the impression that Amelia overheard comments Mrs. W. made about her and completely misinterpreted them. My mother tried to run interference and explain, and Amelia accused her of sticking up for Mrs. W., which she was, but she was doing it truthfully. Mrs. W. would never admit it, but she'll never like Amelia. She likes order and proper behavior, which makes her perfect to keep all of us in line, but will always set her against Amelia, who lives to cause trouble."
"Those two are polar opposites," I agreed. "I think I get along with them both because I appreciate order and proper behavior, but I like a little mischief. Amelia keeps me from being too serious."
"Me too,"
Aiden agreed, sending me a wink. We smiled at each other in friendly harmony when the door swung open. I turned around expecting Amelia. My smile froze when I saw Gage scowling down at me, his arms crossed over his broad chest.
His eyes flicked from Aiden to me and back again. His scowl deepened. The lines around his mouth hard, his eyebrows dark and drawn together. His skin looked a little pale, and he had circles under his eyes. I knew without asking that he hadn't slept since I'd seen him last. I glanced to Aiden and saw that his smile was gone, his face frozen, expressionless. Raising one eyebrow, he said to Gage, "Can I help you with something?" His tone was so chilly. Instinctively, I wrapped my arms around my chest. Something was very wrong between Aiden and Gage. It wasn't my business. It couldn't have been any less my business. This wasn't my family. But Amelia and Charlie both told stories of Aiden and Gage as children. How close they'd been. Closer than cousins. Closer than most brothers. They weren't close now. Ignoring Aiden, Gage said to me, "Did you tell him? About last night?" My heart froze in terror. Of all my worries about that stolen kiss, it had never occurred to me that Gage would be the one to rat us out. My heart restarted in my chest when he said, "The sound we heard." I bit my lip, clawing back my composure, and finally said, "Oh, no, I hadn't mentioned it." Gage's eyes studied me for a long moment before he said to Aiden, "If you and Sophie are done, I need to talk to you."
"I think we're finished here," Aiden said.
I stood, and before I could flee the room, he said,
"Sophie, I'll be out of town for the rest of the week, but if you need anything, you have my numbers."
Nodding to both of them, I said a quick, "Thanks. Have a good trip," before I made my escape from the cold tension between the two men.
Chapter 10. Gage. "You and Sophie shouldn't be alone in here with the door shut," I said, ignoring the look of surprise on Aiden's face. It wasn't what I'd planned to say. I wasn't there to talk about Sophie. But they'd looked far too cozy behind that closed door, smiling at each other as if they shared an inside joke. I didn't want Aiden alone in a room with Sophie, laughing with her and sharing jokes with her. Aiden was all wrong for Sophie. He was too cold, too controlled. "I was having a private meeting with an employee," Aiden said dryly. "You should know that I would never engage in inappropriate behavior with a woman who worked for me, especially one who works in this house." I knew what he was getting at, what he was implying. I wasn't taking the bait. Just in case I'd missed his point, Aiden went on. "Please tell me you're not bothering Sophie." I didn't answer. Anything I said would either be a lie or start a fight. Aiden's eyes narrowed on me, his expression icy. "Sophie is a valuable member of our staff. Aunt Amelia considers her a friend. We are not going to do anything to jeopardize her position in this household. Do you understand?" "So she's just an employee? Then what were you two laughing about in here?" I asked, knowing I sounded both jealous and a little unhinged. I couldn't help myself. Impulse control had been just one of my problems since I'd gotten home. Normally, I could have matched Aiden's icy stare with one of my own. Not now. And not when it was about Sophie. The memory of their shared laughter grated on my nerves. "Our conversation is none of your business," Aiden said flatly. "Now what did you need to see me about?" I wasn't ready to drop the topic of Sophie. "If you're going to have meetings with Sophie, you should do it with the door open," I insisted, knowing I sounded ridiculous. Aiden visibly gritted his teeth. "There is nothing going on between me and Sophie. She is an employee, and I was getting an update on Amelia, which necessitated a closed door because Amelia is nosy. Everyone in this house knows that, and the only one who thinks it's suspicious or inappropriate is you. Which makes me wonder exactly what's going on between you and Sophie." My hands dropped to my sides, my fingers curling into fists. I couldn't bring myself to lie, not to Aiden. but I wasn't going to reveal any information that might compromise Sophie. I settled for saying, Sophie hasn't done anything wrong. I never thought she had. Stay away from her, Gage. We can't afford to lose her. Amelia would never forgive you. Sitting back, he flipped his pen over in his fingers. In a low voice, he said, I haven't looked into the details, but my understanding is that she had a very bad marriage before her husband died. According to Amelia, she hasn't dated since. The last thing she needs is to get involved with a man she can't depend on. Leave her alone. Between the mention of Sophie's bad marriage, the direct order to stay away from her, and the very thinly veiled accusation that I couldn't be depended on, I was ready to launch myself across Aiden's desk and start swinging my tightly clenched fists. Impulse control. I wanted to hit him so badly I could feel the impact of his cheekbones on my knuckles. Feel the crash as I took him from his oversized desk chair to the floor. I don't think I ever wanted to hit someone in my entire life as much as I wanted to hit Aiden right then. It took every ounce of willpower I had to stay where I was, my fisted hands at my sides, my jaw tight. I didn't like hearing that Sophie had suffered through a bad marriage. I really didn't like Aiden ordering me around. But the worst, the hardest to swallow, was Aiden implying that I was undependable. Because he was fucking right. I wasn't myself. It had nothing to do with Sophie. I knew I shouldn't have kissed her in the kitchen, but I wouldn't take that back for $1 million. One kiss. It couldn't have lasted more than a few minutes. I could still taste her in my mouth, feel her sweetly curved body under my hands. I could have kissed her for hours. But Aiden was right. I was undependable. I didn't know if he was referring to my running out on the family 12 years before, or the fact that I'd come home a fucked-up mess. But either way, he had a point. And it burned even more that he was right about her being an employee in our home. She didn't work for me. I hadn't hired her. But I was a Winters, and we signed her paycheck. This had never been a house where a woman at work felt vulnerable. Never. My grandfather, my father, my mother, Uncle Hugh, Aunt Olivia, all of them had made it clear that our staff was to be respected and treated as professionals at all times. There was no chasing after the maids when I was a teenage boy, no matter how pretty they might be. I didn't want to walk away from Sophie. Since I'd come home, she was the only person who made me feel like me. Ironic that the one human being in this house who made me feel at home was one who technically didn't belong here. It killed me to admit that Aiden was right. Sophie deserved better. I wasn't saying I wouldn't pursue her, but now was not the time. I had to get my shit together. There was always the chance that once I was back to normal, this insane attraction would fade. Maybe something in my subconscious was just grasping at Sophie because she felt safe. Maybe. But I didn't think so. I wasn't myself, I knew that. But the way I was drawn to Sophie, it was more than a reaction to stress. I closed my eyes, remembering the scent of her skin, sultry and sweet. The sound of her laugh, joyful and clear. Sophie was mine. I could give her space. I could wait until I was in better shape to pursue her. But she was mine. Opening my eyes, I sent Aiden a level look as I took a seat opposite him and said, I'm not going to bother Sophie. But I'd better not find out you are behind my back. Is this what you wanted to talk to me about? Aiden asked in a dismissive tone. No. I couldn't sleep last night, and I went to the kitchen. Sophie was up, and we were talking. We heard a noise, sounded like someone knocking something over. Were you awake? Aiden sat up straighter, dropping the pretense of disinterest. No. I went to sleep around 11 and didn't wake up until 5:30. What time was this? It was 3:27 when we heard the noise. I made sure Sophie was secure and then went to take a look around. Did you find anything? Aiden asked. Nothing conclusive. A stack of books was out of place in the library. So was a lamp, but nothing was broken. There was no sign of forced entry. But we did hear something fall over. If there was no one else in the house, we should have seen what it was. Instead, everything looked normal. You're saying that someone was in the house and they put back whatever it was they knocked over? Aiden asked. That would be my guess. But the alarm was on. It was armed when we heard the sound, and it never turned off. If you were in bed, Sophie and I were in the kitchen and Amelia was asleep. It's possible it could have been Abel. Does the alarm for the house include his garage apartment? It does. Theoretically, he could have been in the house. I'll check with him this morning. If it wasn't Abel, I'll ask Cooper to come out and go over the system again. When was the last time Sinclair Security reviewed the system? I asked. Sinclair Security was the best private security company in the country, and it was run by the current generation of Sinclairs who happened to be our closest friends. Convenient when it came to things like having one of the best alarm systems known to man installed at Winter's House. Since the death of our parents, no one at Winter's House took security lightly. At my question, Aiden looked uncomfortable, and my nose for trouble went on high alert. What? I demanded. Aiden shifted in his seat and shuffled the papers on his desk, not meeting my eyes. We've had a little trouble this year. We were under the impression it had been resolved, but what kind of trouble? Aiden's expression turned my blood to ice in my veins. It seemed that one of our parents' old friends had gone completely insane and had been leaving crime scene photographs of our parents' murders for the family to find. First Jacob, with a picture of my parents' murder. Then Vance, with the doctored version of the same photograph. Finally, she went to Charlie, where they caught her trying to leave another photograph. The culprit, Marissa Archer, had been a crony of our parents and our Uncle William. She'd also apparently gone stark raving mad, ranting on Charlie's front porch about how only she knew the truth and it wasn't over. He was still out there. We all assumed she was talking about the murders, but shortly after she'd been shut away in a mental health facility, she'd stopped talking completely. Aiden said they were keeping a close eye on her, but since she'd fallen silent, there'd been nothing. It's not like she was a reliable witness anyway. Were any of you planning to tell me about this? I asked. There didn't seem to be much point in bothering you with it, Aiden said, evenly. You weren't here, and you weren't planning on coming home. It wasn't your problem. Of course it's my problem, I burst out. This is my fucking family. Aiden raised one cool eyebrow at me as if to ask, Is it? How sure are we that Marissa Archer was working alone? I asked, ignoring Aiden's taunt. He shrugged one shoulder. We're not sure of anything. Nothing has happened since she's been locked up. But that isn't proof. Is there any chance this is related to the papers Charlie found? Have you had any luck finding out what happened to the baby? I couldn't call the missing child my brother. Not yet. Not until we knew what had happened to him. I'd had a lot of shocks when I'd come home, but finding out that my mother had borne a child before she married my father and given him up for adoption was the biggest. Charlie had found the records, carefully hidden for years until a leak in the roof caused old boxes to be repacked and shuffled around, bringing the buried paperwork into the light. I hadn't gotten my head around the idea that there was another one of us out there somewhere. We knew so little about what had happened. I guessed my father knew because the papers had been among others he would have seen. But we had no idea who had fathered the child or why she'd given him up. We didn't know anything, including where he was or what had happened to him. Aiden shook his head. The Sinclairs have been looking into it, but it's starting to look suspicious. Every time they follow a lead, it falls apart or doubles back on itself. Almost like someone